a lot of information about the grantees that have been funded by EPA, a complete list of grantees from the very beginning in 1998 that have been put on a Google map so that you can see how many there are nationwide, that type of thing. There's a ton of stuff out there. You should go check it out.
I'll do that. Thank you. I'm going to try to put you on my speakerphone. If I lose you, I'll have to call you back. So hang on. Are you there?
Everybody? Yeah, we're still here.
Yep. Sometimes speakerphones act a little quirky, so if we have a problem, you may have to go back on regular phone. But let's try it out and see how
okay.
It works.
Okay, great.
Why don't we start with our discussion on funding sources anyway, and we'll have people that come into the discussion as we go along. One of the big issue in starting these programs is how do we get it started? And of course, that falls back to funding sources and sustainability, and where are you and where are you going, and how could you sustain yourself, and how can you even get started? And actually, it really helps, obviously, to be part of an organization that's doing something, and then you want to build on that. So you basically have an infrastructure. In Kate, Hope's case, she's with an organization that is doing some training already, and it's a question of expanding that. Valerie's got an organization, and there's a potential for expanding that in quite a different way. It appears, and you could correct me, Valerie, but you've got a technically based organization looking to expand how you might expand to do training and jobs, and where Hope has got a training organization in place, and she's seeing how can I expand this to include these green jobs and brownfields. And in both cases, you're starting someplace. So you have resources and some funding at least to get you started so you could start searching out grants and resources, and which is a good start. Often people will start in the community and they just want to start a program, and they're starting from zero, and they've got nothing really behind them at all, and it's really difficult that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it does help that if you start from a position of some sort of ongoing program, and then you build upon it. And what we kind of divide our funding sources into public sources of funds and private sources of funds. And when we talk about public sources of funds, the one that's obvious that comes to everyone is the EPA Brownfields Training Grants. And those are $200,000 grants that last for 2 years. Basically, they're designed as starter grants, $100,000 a year. They're awarded 10 to 12 a year, every year. The RFP for those will go out in a month or so, and we'll alert everyone to the issuing date. And then they're usually due in late November, early December, and then they're awarded about March of the following year. So it's kind of a one-year cycle, and it's never too early to start. In fact, the grantees that will be listening to this conversation are probably thinking of starting a job training program. They need to start right now, and they need to start getting their partners together and thinking about what their organization is going to look like and where they might get some additional funding. $200,000 is not a lot of money to build a large organization. It's not like a Department of Labor grant that might be in the millions. The EPA funding sources are small, and again, a startup, and then it does allow you to get your training program off the ground and going, and then help you tap into other sources of funding. When the EPA grants have very specific ranking criteria that you have to, they're asking for certain things and have certain requirements, and when the RFP comes out, we'll make sure everyone gets a copy, but it'll tell you exactly what you need to do to get points, and then, of course, the highest points, it's graded very objectively. The highest number of points tend to get they'll get the awards, and so it's very objective. point by point. You fill out the forms, and we can also get you a copy of last year's. Anyone who's interested, we could send them a copy of last year's RFP, which will be very similar to the following year. They don't change too much. Some of the ranking and grading criteria change, but they just change slightly. There are other federal monies available, and not often are they specifically geared to brownfields, but they are more towards jobs and green jobs, and they're more general, and many of them go into block grants. They're for very large sums that often go down through state governments and then filter down to smaller entities like the types that our grantees might be interested in. There was a very large one. It was awarded in 2009. It was a $500 million project called Pathways Out of Poverty, and this was funded with stimulus funds under the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. There was about $41 billion allocated towards clean energy in the stimulus package. Most of that goes to energy efficiency, clean fuels, clean energy, but there's also money that flowed into jobs in that. And I'll put this in the post-session notes, but there was the large grant I'm talking about was Pathways Without Poverty, and those grants were due and have, I believe some have been awarded, there is also a possibility of the trickle-down where there might be some funding available through organizations that receive that. But there is a very good publication. Again, I'll put these in the post-session notes. There's an organization called greenforall.org. And Valerie, are you familiar with Green for All?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Are you going to go to the conference next week? Or
isn't that out in California?
There's one in Washington next week.
No, I don't have a lot of money to travel around to these things. So.
Yeah, we don't either. We go to the Brownfields Conference every year, and this is one other one we go to. It's called greenforall.org, and they have a jobs fair next week, which we'll attend and then pass along again to all the participants of the PLC. But they have an excellent website. It's called greenforall.org, and if you click on that, and you could either navigate your way through that or go to greenforall.org/resources. And within that, and again, I'll put the URL in the post-session notes, but there is a publication called Understanding the Competitive Grants for Green Job Training. And this is a 72-page publication that Green for All developed on funding sources and federal grants and how to get them. And while it's geared towards that $500 million Pathways Out of Poverty grant, it's very applicable to all sorts of federal funding. And I'll make sure everyone gets a link to that publication. But if you go through that, it's an excellent publication on green jobs. It will go in high level of detail about green jobs, possible funding for those green jobs on the federal level, and how to go about writing grants to get money from that. The $500 million that was granted out, unfortunately, didn't go to small programs like we have. They went to very large entities. They went to states, and they went to very large groups. Paula from JFY told me she wouldn't be able to attend this meeting, but they, for example, were in a grant. But while the grant was for multi-millions of dollars, their share in it was $20,000 or $30,000. It was a small amount because by the time it flowed through all of the different agencies, their particular program did not receive huge amounts, but they were still involved in the grant. But I would definitely search out in my location, if there was money given to the state under the Pathways Out of Poverty grant, and if there was, try to follow where that money is going and see to what extent you might be able to tap into some of that. A lot of it went through state and local labor organizations, and they may have the money available that they might partner with you in setting up your job program.
Are you talking about like WorkNet groups?
Yes. Yeah, the WIBs, One Stops, the larger labor organizations, because it was labor money that flowed down through this program. It's really tough for small programs like the ones we have to go after these large federal grants because what they often look for, EPA is an exception because it's giving grants directly to small entities in small quantities. So many of these grants are giving out huge sums of money to very large groups. And if you go after federal money, you're almost relegated to joining a larger group. And probably the best strategy is to partner up with to try to find out the players in your county and your state who are involved in green jobs, and to try to partner with them as one of the job developers or job trainers that would be in their master grant. And so when they submit the large grant, and they need you as much as you need them, they need to show a broad coalition of partners because the way the money, giving out these large sums of money, they want to see the money flow through the state and into the community. So if you can partner with a larger group, then go after the federal funds. That does work. There is one exception that seems to work for people. It's Department of Justice money. But again, you don't apply for this directly to the federal government, but you go locally. It's Department of Justice money that it's called Weed and Seed. And we've talked about this in the past. Weed and Seed money is that it's larger grants that flow to local law enforcement agencies. And it's to exactly what it is. It's to keep people off the streets, and it's discretionary money that they could use in a lot of ways. And one of those ways that they could use Weed and Seed money is to train people in green jobs. And you don't have to apply for a large federal grant, but you could go locally. And the best way there is to go to your county law enforcement agencies and see, just ask who's in charge of Weed and Seed and who has Weed and Seed money, and then call them up and describe your program, what you're trying to do, and ask them if they have any funds available through the Weed and Seed program. And what we try to do to the grantees and people who want to start programs is we try to, it's almost like a big pot, and we try to get them to find various funding sources that all contribute into this pot, into this larger pot. So you might get some Weed and Seed money. You could use that Weed and Seed money to get some other State Department of Labor money, and then you could go to the city and then get some money from the city. You may then use all of those things to apply for a EPA Brownfields job training grant. So you see how what I'm leading at is this leveraging of going from small local sources of money to larger and larger and larger. And when we talk about public funding, we just talked about federal, and HUD money works the same way. HUD issues these very large grants for renovation, repair, primarily in lead and asbestos. These monies often flow down through the state. And again, if you could partner up with someone on the state level to go after the HUD money, or on the city level, go after the HUD money, that's probably your best strategy. Because, again, our programs are local. They're not going to be mega bucks. They're going to be these smaller grants. And the best way to acquire these smaller grants is through partnering with the larger entities. So when we talk about the feds, we're talking about EPA, which does fund individual programs, but then we talk about labor, which is basically these very large programs where you want to partner with someone, or HUD, which again you want to partner with someone to that's involved in HUD with lead or asbestos renovation, or you might go after Department of Justice money through Weed and Seed, and that would be something you would you could use. Other federal resources might include these programs like AmeriCorps. These are not funded directly through the federal government, but the AmeriCorps is a government-funded program, and you could apply for AmeriCorps volunteers. Usually that works after you've established your program. You still have to pay for AmeriCorps volunteers, but at a much less reduced rate. And people in Baltimore, for example, have gotten tremendous value out of AmeriCorps volunteers. But when we look at public money and we come down from the federal level, we go down to the state level, there your chances of getting startup funding start to increase. And on the state level, you want to talk definitely to the EPA or DNR, whichever it's termed in your locality. And you want to also talk to if there's an Office of Economic Development, you want to talk to them to see if there is funding available. And certainly the Department of Labor, and see who in the state might have available or discretionary funds to start the type of program you want to start. As you go down in public funding from there, you go down to the city level. And again, it's easier to get city money than it is the state or federal. And the people to talk to in the city government, and usually the larger the city, the more likely there are funds available. So you're looking at Office of Economic Development, or there might be an environmental department in the city that you could go to, or Office of Planning, and you ask them if there's anything in terms of green jobs, any funding available. And what happens in city funding is they get money, block grants from the feds, that might go through the state and then down to the city, and then they would get funds that they have to spend. And that, as we talk about this hierarchy of the hardest money to get and the easiest money to get in public funding, that city money is probably would be the easiest to get when you're starting your program, to go to the city first, and then you go to the state, and then you go to the feds, kind of in that order. Other public money that might be available would be things like tax liens or penalties through the Attorney General's office. Often, if you're in an area where there is a polluter, or if there's been a heavy fine for polluters, the fines go to the state, or they might go to a county. And the Attorney General there's a certain amount of discretion of what they do with those funds. And some states have a prescribed set of organizations that they give the fund. Usually it's to education. But you might be able to, if you're establishing a program, you may want to talk to the Attorney General's office and find out what they do to the levies, liens, and penalties associated with environmental issues. And if they say, well, we have a fund, you might propose to them that you would like to start a green jobs program, and you would like to see or investigate the ability of your organization to utilize those penalties as funding for your job training. And there's a very compelling argument for using environmental fines and penalties to do environmental training. And there have been some grantees who have been successful in that. Probably the most successful was Alaska during the Valdez oil spill. They've got millions and millions of dollars to support environmental training out of those judgments. Clearly, if you were in Louisiana now, which is unfortunately on the verge of an environmental disaster, there would be, for example, strong arguments for using the penalty money that might come from that to start environmental job training programs in that locality. So tax incentives is another place. not so much for potential startup funding, but more for ways of supporting your program, where if a industry goes in and they get a tax incentive, the private sector that gets a tax incentive might support your training program. So I kind of quickly went over some federal sources, state and local, which all comprise that whole era of public funding. The other side of the fence is the private sector and private funding. And private funding is nice because you don't have all the paperwork and accountability that you would have when you're going after public funding. Private funding, we're talking about foundations like and trusts like Goodwill or United Way or the Laborers AGC, which has a training trust fund, other nonprofits. Most of these organizations, you would present your plan that you want to start a job training program, and they would either buy into it or not buy into it. And if they like what you're doing, they might partner with you or provide you with funding or donation. I'm familiar with an organization, for example, that the Goodwill has given them about 6,000 square feet, about 100,000 a year worth of facilities. They pay all their utilities and facilities, mostly because they like what they're doing. And it's a green job type of program where they're recycling computers. So this is while it's not direct money, it gives you startup funding in a sense in that it's in kind, and it gives you a facility, so the facility you don't have to buy. So it's as good as money, and it's a good place to start. United Way is the same way. They may have facilities they're not using, and they may give you a place to start your organization. So if you're just starting now and you need facilities, you may not just think of money, but think of facilities and resources that these organizations might give you. Other sources of private money might even be the private sector. Often, if you have a remediation firm or you have a large polluter or large industry in your area, often they have foundations, and those foundations would be more than happy to be a partner with you in doing green job training. And so you definitely want to approach them as possible sources of income. Developers who may want to make inroads in the area, we often would talk about Walmart or Target or Sears, who really are trying to win over the goodwill of the people in the community, and they pride themselves on supporting the community. Well, job training is definitely, green job training is one of those. So it's definitely a place to go. Community Development Corporations is another source of funds. So basically what I've done here in these 30 minutes is we've kind of run through a whole lot of different possibilities of where we might get sources. Originally, I thought we might have more people on the call. We were going to ask people, and we'll do this offline, ask people to suggest sources that they're familiar with that have worked for them as funding sources. Valerie or Hope, do you have are there some other areas that you think that might be potential places to look for funding?
Well, I mean, there's always just you kind of mentioned about Walmart and Target, so Home Depot, places like that, sometimes will participate because they feel a connection there. I've had a lot of problem with the funding that you were talking about, like trying to tag on to someone's larger program.
Right.
I was not able to get any funding through either one of those, and we had two very large groups get money here. One was out of the Pathways of Poverty, and I went to them, and they wouldn't share anything. And then I tried it with another one, and they also would not share anything. So it was a little frustrating for me.
That is very frustrating.
I don't know if they felt it was competition. I don't know. I felt there was enough money to go around, but they didn't see it the same way. So at this point, I'm having a difficult time. You know, I have a concept. I have it laid out, but my funding has really been very difficult to come by. So I'm listening very attentively to everything you're saying, going, okay, who else can I tap? Because I tried developers. I have not been able to get them to participate either. So.
Have you looked at an organization like HOPES, an established either community college and or like a K-12 with post-secondary training that might be interested in expanding into green job training?
They do, except what they do is instead of allowing me to be a part of it, they simply take the idea and then absorb it under their umbrella.
Gotcha.
And doesn't really leave me an opportunity to do what I'm doing. So I don't know. Maybe it's just selfish in this part of Florida. I don't know. But I tried that, and they were like, oh, good, we'll put that into our program. And it's like, well, but, you know, I'm trying to be self-sustaining of my own.
Right.
And so I really haven't been successful. So,
Valerie, what kind of organization do you have?
Well, I'm a fairly complicated thing. I mean, more complicated than Mike last heard, but I am – my vision is to have actually a model city that uses zero energy and is completely self-sustaining. I am by trade an architect, a real estate broker. I am now a writer and a teacher of green, and the Brownfields training is supposed to be a part of that, the school. So I have a school that I'm trying to develop. Mike, I changed a little bit from just a technical school to something else a little bit different, and I broke that part into an educational outreach program. And then I have my real estate company, and I have my design, a sustainable design. And all of that's supposed to work together. And I've gotten a lot of good response from it, but I just haven't really been able to find the funding for it. I even applied for a fellowship grant through the EPA, a STAR fellowship, to do advanced research and to start a research center, which is supposed to be part of my school. And I did not get it. And it was interesting, the comments I got, how fragmented even they are within themselves. So I don't know. At this point, I'm just listening and saying, okay, try again.
Let's keep going. We'll find you a funding source.
Valerie, are you a nonprofit or what are you?
I have an established profit, and I'm trying to establish a nonprofit. The problem is I'm dealing with very little money, so just establishing a nonprofit costs money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have the funds to just fund all of this, so I've tried even in the most basic level to get help with that, and it's been challenging. And I have people around me who are in quite powerful positions trying to help, and it's frustrating because they have not really been able to do much for me. So it seems like I'm a sort of a case in what is silly about certain things and what's not working. And then people go, well, why is she going through that? Let's change it. So I don't know if I'm just out there as like the carrot saying, okay, and she goes through these programs, she shows what's wrong, and they fix it after me, but I haven't been able to capture any real benefit for myself as of yet. However, there is hope. There is a program coming out of Miami called Green Empowerment Program. Now, it's not specifically about brownfields, but it does organic farming and growing, and then teaching them how to become self-sustaining with that so they actually learn how to cook it and be part of a restaurant. And this was funded with a grant, so yay, there's money there. And hopefully it's going to come to Broward County, which is where I am. And so I met a private owner today who's actually offered about 2 acres of land to let me maybe start what I want to do. So there I might have found my funding is actually a private owner who's willing to take the first step.
Mike, do you know if anybody has tried the NSF, National Science Foundation Advanced Technology Education Grant?
Right. We could let Glow talk about that. We actually have one. HMTRI has had a couple of them. Glow, do you want to briefly talk about that?
Yeah. Here at Eastern Iowa Community College, we have had an ATE grant since 1994, so we've been doing this for a long time. Our center is called the Advanced Technology Environmental and Energy Center, and we are kind of like a clearinghouse for environmental and energy curriculum. And that website is also available if you want to check that one out, too. It's ateec.org. And through the years, we have developed many, many products that with the requirements of our grants. And they are also available on the website for free as a download. And we have defining environmental technology charts and reports, defining energy technology starts and charts and reports, all kinds of things. Brownfields in a box, which Mike and I have used at many, many of our grantee meetings and outreach meetings for EPA grant. The two just kind of go together very, very well, and I'm lucky to be part of both of them.
What it sounds to me in startups is rather than starting large at the federal level, probably starting at the local level, at the base level, in the case of Valerie's, if you could secure property or a facility, and then you do need to get some dollars to get you into, so you could get your nonprofit organization going. And it could be you may have to find a foundation or a trust, Goodwill, for example. You might try them.
You know,
or
I'm thinking of, I may try. Have you ever heard of James L. Knight Foundation?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Would you suggest that maybe they might be something? Okay.
Yes. Yes. Try them. And anyone involved in architecture or technology, anything in technology is good. There's also the problem with James L. Knight is they're larger. You're almost looking for a small trust. You know, you're familiar with Perkins, probably. They're big in architecture. Perkins and Will, yes.
Something like this?
Well, they do have a foundation. The problem with people like the Perkins Foundation or James L. Knight, Ford, they're so big that they're bigger and they're almost like the federal government. Everyone goes after them. When we're starting is we want to go micro. We want to go to a local foundation or trust. We want the fellow that had $20 million and died and wanted to do some good in his community, or the person who has done well, made a couple million dollars and wants to pay back the community with money that he doesn't want to pass on or whatever, and he wants to see some good done of it. And what he'll do is he'll give you the money to work with, and he might be even a partner with you. And the trick is how do you locate and identify that? And I think what we want to do, because we've used our 30 minutes, is not next week, but the week after, we're going to be working with the community. And I think we could evolve this discussion into how do we work with the community to obtain funding to start up a startup. And we could also do this, and how do we work with the community to expand our existing program to include job training. So why don't we go here in more detail next week? And I think the trick is to find on a micro scale who locally, what you need is a local angel is what you need. Someone who's willing. You'd be amazed. Someone to give you a facility, or someone to give you $10,000 or $5,000 to just see what you can do with it. And that allows you to go to the next level that it seems that you need to do. And why don't we investigate this a little bit more in this next session, not next week, but it'll be the week after.
Okay.
And between now and then, we'll put in the post-session notes a little bit about some of these websites and where we want to go.
Mike,
that.
Is that May 12th?
That would be...
May 12th.
Yes, May 12th, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Be at the same time, 1 o'clock p.m. Central Daylight Time.
That's right.
Okay.
And
okay.
We post all of these. We're going to post an MP3 of this and all of them up at the toolbox. Glow, you already explained how they can access those MP3.
Right. I mean, I've talked about the toolbox, but once you're at the Brownfields toolbox, if you want to look at the little tabs along the top, there's one that says PLC Corner. And if you click on that tab, you'll see where there's a link to all the notes from all of these PLC sessions and the audio notes, too.
Right. So in the next day or so, we'll send you some post-session notes. We'll have this PLC recording as an MP3 up there. But we'll go further in the next session in terms of working with the community. And I think this is a really valid point in startups. So how do you gain local support? Not just, we want you to do it, but I'm willing to contribute funds to help you do it. And I think we need to go there and see what we can do there.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Right. We'll see you all soon.
Thank you very much. It was very informative.
Okay. See you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.